Was the fire sermon a quote-unquote teaching moment of hyperbole? I love to take photographs, for example, and it helps me engage much more deeply with the world outside my skull, and it fills me with rapture, compassion, and joy. Does the Buddha's recipe for liberation truly entail cutting off this experience of beauty? Where is the Theravada equivalent of the Zen suchness, the awe of life and its ephemerality? Thank you. And the fire sermon came at a point in the Buddha's teaching where he was, I mean, there's, you know, there really was a lot of monks there, but they were actual fire worshippers as ascetics, and so that of course, you know, what ends up being passed on is fairly distilled, but that flavor, I think probably of the essence of the teaching, I think remains, and it was such a radical shift for them to reflect in that way that it really was a catalyst for this very large group to realize the teachings, and not just kind of her hyperbole making a good story. You know, the flavor of the Buddha's teachings, and particularly in the Theravada, the flavor is one of dispassion, relinquishment, a letting go. Not because there isn't beauty or there isn't an appreciation of the world around, but because of the habitual tendencies of the mind to hang on to the bits that we like and try to get away from the things that we dislike, so that it's putting in a context where you see the expressions of appreciation and delight in beauty and the nature around is in the Theragata and the Therigata. Those are the verses of the elders of the monks and nuns at the time of the Buddha, and then it's their own expression of their either delight or awe at the experience of the world around them, or the Buddhist teachings, or different perspectives that come up, and those are an interesting way of seeing the Buddha's teachings in a slightly different light. Also, I mean, on a certain level, we I think of the monasteries in our tradition. I mean, they're all in incredibly beautiful places. It's kind of amazing, really. It just seems to happen. We end up in these very beautiful settings. I remember Going to visit. I mean, there's the branch monasteries in England, and of course they're all very beautiful settings. England's very pretty, and you know, even a place like Amaravati, which is within an hour's drive around Amaravati, which is where Ajahn Amaro lives, there's just over 20 million people. Right, blink. But it's rural. It's countryside, rural countryside, very pretty, and Chithurst is incredible. But then I went to, and I that was when I was on. I was doing a year sabbatical in the Chithurst Forest. That was really beautiful, and then. I went out to visit there's a small branch monastery in Devon, and Devon's in the west country of England. It's very lush there. You think, England in general is already lush and green, but then you go out to Devon and it's just vibrant green. It's just so. And then the little monastery is a very old country farmhouse, and it's got the kutis, and it's very beautiful. And then beside it is it's on a slope of a hill, and then top of the hill is a common land. And so I went up there for a walk on the common land, and then sort of you crest over and you look down into another valley. And I remember, I'd always been sort of oohing and awing about how this was. And I get up, look across, down into this next valley. And I just had to laugh. I said, this is just absurdly beautiful.